Detroit. That's Regina Carter, cousin, by the way, of James Carter, the saxophonist, on violin with Artistia. It's from her exciting 2010 album, Reverse Thread, a cultural journey to her roots in Mali. Will Holzhauser on accordion, Chris Lightcap on bass, Yakuba Sissoko on kora, and Al Vester Garnett, who happens also to be her husband, on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And, okay, we have some straight talking to do today. Election 2016 offered proof that millions of voters had had it with a tone-deaf two-party system that seemed woefully out of step with their America. They served notice in many, many ways, in some cases switching parties or not voting at all or supporting independent candidates and movements instead. And they created momentum for new political possibilities and choices. But as the dust settled after the election, it seems things have returned or are quickly returning to their original state, with politics largely a matter concerning Democrats and Republicans, and practically nobody else. So we have to deal with a question here. How much longer do we live with the Democrats versus Republicans equation? Even now, I mean, major things are happening. Big fights are going on over Trump and his nascent administration, which is already creating all kinds of chaos and havoc in Washington, D.C., and eventually in all of our lives. But the dialogue and even the fighting are still confined, it seems, to that old Democrats versus Republicans equation. So what happened to these nascent movements, these political movements that were such a bright spot in the 2016 elections? Why aren't we hearing from them, especially now when the fight is at pitch battle? You know, the fight is about the things that are going to affect us in everyday life. Healthcare. The fight is about the budget. The fight is about the priorities of this administration. The fight is about the vision here. The fight is actually about the very definition of what the democratic process is going to be all about. And those new voices that we had begun to hear from, they're nowhere around. Have they lost heart? Or do they believe themselves to be so outmatched that there's no point in being part of this discussion? That it's lost. What's going on? Have the progressive movements that were beginning to blossom, have they decided to just give up the ghost and try something else in the meantime, like just staying out of it until the next round of elections and they can make noise again? This is very disturbing. we're still stuck. We've come right back to where we were before. And where we were before was not a good place. We have seen, in fact, many of the battles being waged now are the direct result of the inability of the established parties to fix a problem. They're creating more problems instead, and they're not able to fix those. But we're not in the discussion. Why? Or am I totally misreading the landscape here? Am I totally missing something? Am I being one-sided and unfair? Are my concerns just not justified? Am I making a big thing out of nothing? My point is, it looks as if people have already headed for the hills. They either don't want to be part of this portion of struggle, or they believe that it is useless going up against whatever is left of the Democrats and the Republicans and Trump. They just can't handle it. They don't have the wherewithal to handle a fight like this. But in the meantime, do we see evidence of very brisk organizing? Do we see an insistence on being part of the discussion? Or do we see that a transfer has been made? They're willing instead to hand the responsibility to Bernie Sanders. He's a stand-in. He is kind of Democrat, but not too Democrat. He still has a couple of independent characteristics left that they could work with. And so he will stand in for the larger community that had begun to organize, that had begun to show some strength, but mysteriously are out of it. They're not part of this discussion. They're not part of this fight at this stage. Maybe I'm reading things wrong, but that's what I'm getting. I'm getting that we have returned to the way things used to be, and that we are settling. We are accommodating the very system that we said let us down, betrayed us, that has become irrelevant, that is siding with the wrong side. All these criticisms that we had of the Democratic Party, even to the point of saying that there should be no crying if people should decide to just walk away from this Democratic Party. But in the height of battle, and, you know, it's at a height. We look around and we see, we the people, see ourselves again alone. Totally unprotected in this fight. And the people who are somehow trying to put up something of a fight on the other side are not the people we want involved in our behalf. But that's the arrangement from where I sit. That's what I'm seeing. We have abandoned ship. Our own ship. And we're looking to this badly wounded system that had betrayed us to somehow put up the fight that we ourselves are not putting up. I'm very disturbed about it. What became of these boisterous, very promising movements? Why is it that we are not seeing them in the fray? Why is it that you get the sense that they think their mission, as best as they could have done it, has been accomplished, and now they're just trying to reassemble themselves for something else? But in the meantime, the battle is raging. And we have no defenses. We have no dog in this fight. How did that happen? Oh, again, it's quite possible I'm dead wrong. I'm misreading this whole thing. It is quite possible that people are in fact doing the job of the organized resistance that we thought we had begun to see. So I rely on your guidance today to set me straight, because it is quite possible, and I'm hoping, in fact, that I'm wrong. It is quite possible I am misreading the whole thing. So set me straight. Set this whole thing straight so we are clear. We'll take the short break and come back to your observations at 888-874-4888 right after this short break. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're talking about the spectacular absence of our people in a fight that's going on. It's raging, and it will have very serious consequences when the dust settles. But we're not in this fight at all. It doesn't seem so. And I'm asking, am I reading that correctly? Or is something happening that I don't know or haven't seen or has not yet made itself manifest? What's going on? What do you think is going on? Donald Trump is up against the ropes, as well he should be. The Republicans themselves are fighting among themselves over the health care plan that they hope to repeal and replace. We have the mass firings of U.S. attorneys. We have a still unformed foreign policy. We have all kinds of things happening. And the only real appreciation we have is from Trump's side, saying this is what's going to happen, this is what we're going to do, and this is what we are doing. And we have a counter, or kind of counter to that, where the Republicans are saying, no, we won't allow that. Instead, we want this. And even so, they're fighting among themselves. The Democrats are just saying, no. We don't want that. But they don't have the power. They have very little power to change the course of anything. It seems to me that this would have been a great time for those burgeoning movements that had emerged in the 2016 election to really stretch out. This is when you go for broke. You have nothing to lose. But we're not hearing very much from that group. Nor are we seeing that they're doing the other kind of work that they needed to do, which is to concentrate on organizing. So the whole thing is in a mess. But we are right back where we started. In fact, I would even go so far as to say that we have already lost very, very precious ground and time. But again, I leave it open that I am probably wrong about this. I'm probably misreading this whole thing. There are probably things that I'm not seeing or paying attention to or ignoring. I just want to know whether that's the case. I'm hoping it's the case that I'm not seeing what is happening, and you can share with me what in fact is happening and what in fact I'm missing. Michael from New Jersey, how are you? Michael? Lou?
Yes. Oh, how sorry. Hi, how are you, Utrice?
Okay, but I'm a little bit concerned, as you can tell, about what I'm not seeing.
Yes, well, none of us are seeing it. We're with you. We don't see it either. We see Bernie pop up on television and squawk about how we're going to fight tooth and nail against this particular policy and how disastrous it's going to be. But the political parties have lost their mantle. People are not really interested in them. And people are kind of throwing their hands up and saying, no, I'm going to survive, you know. They see themselves... You know, I'm sorry, I have a cold. I'm coughing a little bit. They see themselves in this milieu, and they try to see how they're going to survive for the next 4 years, et cetera. But I think maybe the political parties is not the way to go. But we could learn something from, you know, our adversaries, let's say. You know, they have this legislative exchange, ALEC, that advocates for certain policies that are mostly destructive to people's interests, but they're sponsored by the corporations. And pretty much we have, you know, a United States of corporations today, and they're kind of in charge. So we need the people to have something similar, perhaps. And perhaps we can have a people's legislative exchange policy advocation group that develops constituencies. And maybe we shouldn't call it a political party. Maybe we should just have, like, just like the corporations have ALEC, the people have this legislative exchange to advocate for policies and say, if you don't go this way, we are going to mobilize our constituencies that sign up to this, and we're not going to vote for these, you know, you people to you people have to represent us.
But should we face down these parties that emerged in 2016, not only offering to carry the task forward of leadership on these issues, but have said nothing since the 2016 elections? I mean, we haven't heard from any of them as to what they believed were the in the middle of all of the turmoil, what they believed they gained, what ground they gained, what they were able to accomplish and what they believed, you know, are the what they believe are the serious tasks ahead. Do you get the sense that we need to jump on them too?
I think, yeah, I think very importantly, Utrice, you're putting your finger on something, and you had mentioned it before. I think I'm repeating something you said, that the Democrats in particular and the Green Party and maybe other groups, they haven't had a come-to-Jesus moment regarding 2016. And lest we have a critical review and see what happened. You know, I saw on TV they're showing, you know, the rise of Trump, and they did a sort of a documentary of his political movement that that got him elected, etc. But we haven't had some kind of, not in the press, nobody's really pulled the taffy apart. You do the best job, I think, but nobody's really said what happened in 2016. We need to come to Jesus and confess our sins, because we can't move forward as a false proposition. And until we see what is, what actually happened, what we are, we can't go forward as anything but a nebulous reaction, which is what we get now with Bernie, etc. So, as we said, if we can see that politics and political action, as we said some time ago, some may agree with it, that the best that can be done is to buy time to figure things out. Well, we're not buying time. We're not we're not buying time for ourselves. Like you say, we're left unprotected.
Yep, we totally are. Thanks, Michael, for getting us started.
Hope you're welcome.
You do better with your cold.
Thank you.
All right, thanks again. From Connecticut, Gabriel, you're on the air.
How you doing, Patrice? It's been a while.
Fine, I'm hanging in. How about you?
Well, it's been a while. Thank you for asking. I think we're all going through the aftermath of being March. Those on the East Coast, I would say the election blues, and the administration's, the executive branch's psychopathic and schizophrenic decision-making process, meaning that on a high note, and probably only one of the very few high notes, is that Donald Trump appointed Kennedy Jr. to head up the commission to oversee the CDC on vaccinations connection with autism and autoimmune diseases. That is one accomplishment which we haven't seen any results yet or any type of empirical evidence that the CDC has been liable and culpable and compromised to the pharmaceutical and drug industries to allow over 70 vaccinations to occur before the age of 3 or 4 years old for a child. That being said, and I believe that would be placed in a favorable category of the Trump administration, but the scale of so many derogatories and negative executive orders and the firing and termination or the forced leverage or the leaning of our oath-taking officials to resign is something to give pause, as if you're having, as they do in Rome, a Caligula or a Hitler or a Mussolini type of person in power. Some have said, and I'm giving Donald Trump the benefit of the doubt, some have said it takes a wolf to get rid of a vampire. And remember, Donald Trump is an outsider. He may be a Mason. I think he's a Scottish Rite Mason, but he's an outsider. And he's dealing with the deep state. And the deep state has very, very, very evil branches that touch every form of government, every form of life. And I think Donald Trump is quite sober on how deep state it is.
Listening.
Okay. That being said, there is a growing, in my analysis, there's a growing feeling that my gut feeling is that this megalomaniac, real estate developer hustler, this so-called Dorito head guy, inherently has a higher moral ground than the deep state oligarchs, the Rothschild banking institution, who foster and promote, this is not Donald Trump, his opposers of the deep state.
You're giving us an analysis of the Trump administration.
Correct.
So far.
The
question, though, is that whether people agree or don't agree, whether it's deep state or less deep state, the fact is he's in business. He's up and running. All right. He's got his program up and running, and it is now about fighting his way through to get most of the marbles in play. Well, that's just politics. I'm talking about the fact that starkly absent from any of these discussions are the movements and the parties that had emerged in 2016 as possible lines of defense for all of us. And we're not hearing anything from them. They're not in the fight right now. And it doesn't look like they're taking it on in any event. So that we are on our own. We have, I mean, there's nothing that suggests that there is an organized system that will be effective in seeing to our interests or protecting our interests. It's to the old Democrats versus Republicans, and with the with the idea that both really have betrayed our interests, and neither is acceptable as credible leadership.
Well, if I can be facetious and cynical, you can think of various different initiatives in special interest groups for that that dismal analysis on your part. And that
right,
is,
but I'm saying I'm not interested at this point. Let's set aside who is to blame. Let's deal with what the reality is now, and whether we are reading the landscape correctly, and whether we have before us a whole new set of tasks, a whole new set of work that we have to do, that we are ignoring or putting off.
Well, here we have you and I are talking, and it's peer-to-peer analysis, peer-to-peer conversation. It is a free, non-paying volunteer think tank. And this is a think tank process that you have for 1 hour show Monday through Friday. And I would have to say that these grassroots efforts, these progressive movements, take your pick, they're all out there. They do exist, but they're being stopgapped, opposed, restricted by the mass media and the Bar Association in the courtrooms of a judicial system. Now, you didn't want me to mention what's causing it or casting blame, but I'm giving you my analysis. Black Lives Matter.
Now, when I say, let me make myself clear. I'm not trying to say to you what not to talk about. I'm saying, let's see if we could focus on the realities without saying, well, these people did this and these people did that. The fact is, whatever they did or didn't do, let's deal with the consequence of what they did or didn't do. And that is that we are in this space right now in which it appears that we have come full circle and we are now revisiting the old dynamic of the Democrats versus the Republicans, neither party giving us very much in the way of new ideas and new ways of doing things, and even a sense of fairness, a sense of comfort with the vision, the so-called vision that they have, that that they intend to enact. So that's where I was hoping to just start from. But the other things, you know, understood, we will get to them as to who did what and who caused what to happen. My thing is, okay.
I believe that you have moved on and shifted the call to action and shifted the strategy and the physical to-do list into an arena and to a new paradigm. And that new paradigm is to recognize and question what it means to be an American. Is an American to be co-opted to being a United States citizen, where you are sacrificing your inalienable rights and become a 14th Amendment citizen, where you have privileges and converted into, your rights have been converted into privileges and services, and you're a victim of the codes and statutes because you are a United States citizen, or are you an American? And that's a new conversation, a new paradigm that a lot of people have not yet been able to digest. And you have these other movements who are not really synchronizing themselves. They're not really collaborating with themselves. You had a very sobering moment last Friday where the black movement, black men, black women, have been part of the forefront in the movements, but the LGBT community, the gay community, the Latino community, is nowhere to be found when it comes to our strife. However, the immigrant community, the Mexican community, the gay and LGBT community were always, like, almost naturally default and expect the black community to come on board and be on top of their movement and their agenda, but it's not reciprocated. This is the sobering moment, and this is the paradigm shift in order for us to survive, and to question what it means to be an American as opposed to a United States citizen.
Well, you certainly raised a very deep question here, and it is perfectly legitimate, and it should be pursued. Thanks so much for contributing today. 888-874-4888. E from Edgewater, you're on the air.
Hi, Trace.
Hello.
Glad to hear that you're feeling well today.
Thank you. I'm hanging in.
That Friday, I didn't get a chance to free my mind, so I'm going to try to do a little bit today. We love Big Brother. That's what it seems to come down to. It's like an Orwellian world we're in right now, and we love Big Brother because Big Brother protects us from the bad guys, right? So we just want to be protected because we're in fear. We're seeing buildings being blown up by terrorists. Everything is done by terrorists, and we need Big Brother to protect us. But, you know, something's bothering you as much as bothers me about the Clintons, right? Am I wrong or right on that?
Oh, I'm clear about what's bothering me about the Clintons. In fact, very soon, we will begin the next leg. It is really bad, horrible about the Clintons and their activities all around the world, especially in the African world, what has been done. So we're coming up right with that very shortly. But let's address the question today. Do you see...
I'm sorry, I won't interrupt you.
No. Do you see... how do you see the situation right now? Do you see the situation as reflecting that group of new political entities were participating in the election of 2016. And now that it's over and the dust is settling a little bit, they have something to contribute and are contributing it? Or do you see that we have returned to the status quo of Democrats versus Republicans, neither party necessarily doing what we anticipate that they should be doing?
Yes, I think they're 10 years ahead of us. So what they're planning now is for 10 years from now. What's happening now, they planned 10 years ago. We're behind them. They have us. Every turn we can make, they have us. And what we got to do is like what you did. You're the perfect example. You felt sick. You didn't know what was wrong. You went to the doctor for help, and they told you to go home and die. Well, that's what we're all like. We're all home told to die, and we have to do things ourselves to prevent that, and that's what you're doing, and that's what we all have to do. And like David from Brooklyn said, there's not much you can do with this kind of a system. You can get roads fixed, maybe. You can call your councilman. We're not in the 60s anymore. This is a whole new ball game. Big Brother has taken over. Right? The Democratic Party and the Republican Party are together. They just make believe they fight. This is all like a TV show for our enjoyment, for us to watch. The reason why the Clintons don't get in trouble, and I started listening to BAI in the early 90s, I think just when you started working for BAI. And Gary Null used to talk about the Clintons back then in the 90s, about all the stuff they got away with Whitewater and Enron and the Vince Foster case they said he committed suicide. They found him with a bullet in his head. And we keep doing these things, but nothing ever gets done to them. And the reason why is because they work for this corrupt system that's being taken over by those eight families you talked about that have all the money. And these corporations that we allowed to get out of hand and crazily so much power that the system is like something we never seen before. We have to unlearn everything we've learned to this point and start learning over again of how to deal with these corrupt people. And until we do that, there's really nothing we can do.
In other words, how does that apply? And what would you therefore say about the immediate political situation? Do we check out and instead, just ignore this political arrangement that has already taken shape? Or do we fight if we are going to fight? How do we fight? What is the mechanism we have? What is the organized mechanism we have?
Right.
Would help us wage an effective fight.
Right. I know that's the question you've been asking us for like a year now, and it's hard to come up with something because we're in such a bind here. At least we used to have the press to try to keep them, honest a little bit. But we don't have, so everything we're hearing, all the stories, we're like parrots. We hear something today, we can't wait till tomorrow comes to talk about what they told us today. What we talk about today is what we heard yesterday. What, 1 minute we're saying Trump might be mentally unstable. And then the next day that's all forgotten and we're talking about Trump is accusing Obama of wiretapping the this and that. It's all just to distract us. It's a distractor, and we're paying so much attention to it that we don't know what we're doing. We have to calm down here a little bit. It's a waiting game. They're waiting on us. We're waiting on them. Let's not get crazy. I'm not saying all this stuff to make anybody nervous or scared. We don't have to be in fear. They can't do anything to us as long as we have our minds. Let's not give our last freedoms away, our mind, because when we keep repeating these stories about Bernie's 13 million votes, we're validating their made-up stories. We're giving them validation. where George Bush Jr., I can't stand this. He must be laughing his butt off that we're actually going for this stuff. This is ridiculous.
So your recommendation is that we need to calm down a bit and then really slowly begin to reassemble something or to assemble something that would help us fight. Thanks so much for calling in today.
All right,
from San Diego, Linda, you're on the air.
Hello. Hello, Ludwig. This is Linda.
Hello, Linda. How are you?
All right. Excuse me. I sound a little strange in the morning. I want to commend you for being one of the few people who are bringing out exactly this issue of passivity that I'm observing in the progressive movement since Bernie Sanders abandoned us, for lack of a better word. And I've been telling my peers here in San Diego, the progressive movement, what good does it do to us to march, but we continue to take the sidelines and we're not organizing to create an alternative to what we have, which is putrid political system. I get so exasperated because we march, okay? And then everybody goes home and watch TV and eat McDonald's, and that's the end of it. We should be so intent in creating another political outlet for this putrefied system. But people are not doing it. I didn't march this last time because I don't see any point. Everybody's going to go home and go back to their own private business. And Jill Stein is coming to San Diego on Wednesday. I'm looking forward to hear what she has to say because the Green Party is shining from its absence. Doing something consistent, solid, and determined to obliterate these two corrupted political systems or political parties, I meant to say that. So you're totally right. We need some group of people who are willing to put the time and effort to galvanize the people to create an option to what we have.
Am I being unrealistic in thinking that, well, things should happen faster? Are people who take a position that we ought to have an organized resistance by now, are we being unreasonable?
Not at all, because I don't think we can afford to wait until the last moment, you know, until the frog cannot jump out of the boiling pot. You know, we have to be very proactive now. Not tomorrow, no mañana. We have to be proactive now and very, very determined to provide ourselves with an option that is a lot more viable for the majority of the people who are not willing to be part of this corrupted system. Let's look at the Cuban Revolution. Fidel Castro started with only a handful of men. But he stayed with his program, he stayed with his ideas and created a revolution with only a handful of people. But here we have so many distractions, you know, of people get their lives busy with all kinds of inconsequential matters, and they don't put the time and energy to invest themselves in something of much greater consequence. And people are almost willingly giving the power away. I feel we are a masochistic political group that goes back from a punishment every 4 years.
We're a bunch of masochists. and we look forward to more punishment every 4 years. I think that's a great analysis right there. Thank you so much, Linda. But I take your point very seriously, and that is that we need to galvanize our power, amass it, bring it together, and that is the leadership of these different movements, in order to begin the process of building an organized resistance. You can say all you want that you're part of a resistance movement, but if you have no organization and you're not in the fight, you know, what's the point? What's the point?
Exactly. You know, I never watch TV, but the other day I catch a program with Dr. Phil, and he had a woman who was and her mother who were urging her to leave the relationship, and they show all the many times that she had been in the hospital with black eyes and broken bones from her husband, and they asked, what are you waiting for? And she said, oh, well, I don't know at what point I can leave. And that's us. How many black eyes do we need to get in order to say, this is enough. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take my power back. You know?
So this is why we start asking the questions openly, you know, right in the open, so nobody could say we're hiding our concerns. Thank you so much, Linda, for your call today. South Carolina, Khalil, you're on the air.
Hi, you Trees. How are you today?
Fine, thank you. Hanging in. How are you?
Good. I'm well, and you sound well, and we're glad you're on the mend.
Thank you.
I just kind of wanted to piggyback on the last couple of callers because Big Brother is real, and I think it's going to be difficult to get anyone competent to lead our conventional political process that doesn't have any baggage that cannot be blackmailed, because that's what's going on now, because everything we do is being monitored and recorded, so it's not, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility. In fact, that's exactly what's going on. So we really have to get ourselves together now. And as to your question, I think that we're just tired. People are tired and fed up and just tired. Okay. We keep going around and around. And like you said, right back where we started. But I think maybe we have forgotten about how a movement and a protest is supposed to operate, right? Because like the Women's March, that was amazing. That was really invigorating. You know, it made me feel much better. It got me out of my doldrums. But when you have that many people behind you, when you have that type of momentum, you have to come to the table with some demands. Okay, that's basic protest 101, you know, that's revolution 101. You have to have demands. It's great to have everybody show up, but you have to have three or four demands that can coalesce everyone together and then work out the little minutia later. Because we're going to have to end up taking care of ourselves, because if you hear what these people are saying now, they are salivating over destroying what we call our government. And they're stealing as much as they can, as fast as they can. And that, I mean, just think about it. This is ridiculous. Now, here we have on the heels of Wells Fargo committing what anyone could term mass fraud. Like, if you or I got someone's credit card number and address and opened up another account, you know, you might be looking at felony charges depending on how much you charge. Okay? But they were doing this as course de rigueur. That was part of their business model. And now we're loosening regulations on banks? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, it makes sense if you understand the political arrangements here. And the political arrangement, number one, is this is pay to play. When they make an investment in a candidate or a party or a system, part of the understanding is that their interests are protected. Even if they do wrong, they are protected.
Well, that's exactly
But you make a very good point. Your point being that you have to have demands and you have to leverage the power that you have to make some demands. But it is possible that this showing of power, even if it was latent power on the part of the Women's March, it was an excellent place to start, and they started excellently. What needed to happen and still needs to happen is now you groom this power. You give it some direction. And, you know, it sounds like an easy thing to do. It isn't an easy thing to do. And I was very, very encouraged by that march. All the more because women of color organized it. And it was an excellent starting point for a whole new approach to creating power, I thought. And they needed to just begin to build on that. I understood the reason for the march. It wasn't meant to be, to have a specific demand as such, except that it should have encouraged women to look to ways in which they can mobilize the power that they have and amass it for particular to achieve particular outcomes. So it was a starter a march, if you will. So I get that.
Okay. Right.
The question, though, is that now there is a fight going on. Is it possible that any part of that march could be distilled into some kind of thing that would have input in what is happening now? And other movements like it, you know, the Sanders people and the Green Party people, they have come enough along the way to be present and accounted for at this time in these political struggles.
Yes.
So that's what I'm saying. How do we develop this and call them? They're not immune, by the way, in my view, they're not immune from criticism and they're not immune to accountability. But we can't have them just disappear and not be in the fight in some way.
Right. See, this is what I'm concerned about. We don't want to lose this critical mass that we have now. You know, we still have Black Lives Matter. We have the remnants of the Women's March, and we have what's left over with Bernie. And if you look at it like a Venn diagram, there's a lot of intersection there. You know, there's a lot of intersection to go around. But I don't know. People are tired. You have to wake up. Wake up.
The people are tired, but we have indications also that as tired as they are, they did make an effort in many ways. And the leadership of those efforts now must come forward. And they have to, you know, explain what happened in 2016 and what they think they can accomplish on their own and with the help of others. What could we accomplish in 2017?
I don't know, but you know what? You're doing your part, and I think most of the listeners are doing what they can do, and you are a leader. And you foster the conversation. You're a teacher, a leader, a mentor. You are a spearhead.
Well, I thank you for that, but I see myself as really just trying to get us all on the same page. We're all lacking a certain amount of vision and courage. And maybe in talking to each other, we can kind of hold on to each other a little bit and begin to adjust to the idea that we are powerful people, if only we recognized it. And that if we flex our own muscles, we can we can achieve something. We just have to talk it through. But sometimes we have to kind of get into more action than talk. But right now it's important to talk. Thanks so much, Khalil, for your call. That brings us to the end of our program today. And it is not necessarily the end of our discussion. We will continue tomorrow because this is very important. I keep saying that we are at a very critical point in history, but also in our lives. And we are not going to have available to us the opportunities all the time to do something with what the knowledge that we have. So in as much as we can put our foot in the door, let's do that. But we have to have some direction. We have to have some knowledge of what we're doing. And we have to see. We have to have a vision that's way down the road. I thank you for joining me today. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Molotovs. I always say it wrong. It's Meditations and Molotovs, not the other way around. Meditations and Molotovs with Vincent Emanuele. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege for me to be in your company. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.